your tenderloin, I'm sorry, your timeline filled with all sorts of just, rage bait.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Blue Sedition Podcast. I'm Nate Brady. As always, I'm joined with my Marxist, communist, radical leftist co-host, Mike Smith. Mike, what's going on?
General of Antifa. You got to remember that. I'm
general,
three-star general.
Two-star general. Oh, congratulations on the promotion.
Thank you.
Wow.
Yes.
That was
well
recent.
Deserved.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You were in charge of the Campbell's soup throwing initiative, if I remember.
That was me. That was my idea.
Wow.
I know. you got to be proactive in the Antifa. They really, what did Trump say? They've got a lot of comers there. You got to be going up the ranks.
Good guys on both sides, really. Sorry. I know that's a hoax. I'm not allowed to bring up the good guys on both sides things, because that's the only thing they're catching the left with right now, is that was a huge hoax. He didn't really say it like that. It was taken out of context. So we're all liars. So
interesting.
Yeah. Anyway, what's going on today? What do you want to talk about?
So I got some stuff I want to talk about today. It's going to be a lighter episode. We're going to have a little fun. We're going to have a little fun today.
Oh,
okay.
Really? Let's hear what the topics are and see how light this is going
to
be.
So I want to start off by talking about social media sites.
Okay.
In particular, just the tragically online folk like you and I.
Okay, sure.
I'm sure our listeners as well. We're on, all the social media sites and we're arguing with everybody. I know recently I gave up Twitter because of, well, so many reasons, but Elon particularly taking over and turning it into a right-wing Nazi fest, we'll say, and all the advertisers dropping and all that stuff. I went away. I'm on Blue Sky now. And there was an article posted, of course, with the Times, because they just love this nonsense. And they were basically calling it an echo chamber. They're saying, well, with the quote unquote nuclear block option, these social media sites become echo chambers where you're just hearing your own side of the argument. I just wanted to open the discussion to that because I know that X, formerly Twitter, had basically announced, although I don't think it was an official announcement, I think that it was a leak, and then Elon was like, and it's about damn time too, where they're gonna make it so that blocks, how is it going to go?
So I'm not sure the exact implementation, but first of all, the main reason why he's not, or I don't think he can, eliminate blocks entirely is because it is a requirement of being an app in the Apple Store.
Oh.
So he couldn't remove it entirely. So now he's trying to do some roundabout way.
They're calling it a soft block over on Blue Sky. They're saying it used to be, so the nuclear option on Blue Sky is if I block you, you can't see my posts, you can't see my page, you can't go to my profile, no nothing. If I reply to somebody that is replying to something in your thread, you can't even see my reply. So like I have excised you from all visibility of my social time.
Right.
In every way. And I think that it was that way on Twitter. And now he's saying, well, if you're making a public post and you've blocked somebody, they can still see your public post, but they couldn't before. I think that's the main change.
And I think, honestly, that's what's happening anyway. If I block somebody, they're going on their alt and they're looking at my account, and then they're copying it and they're putting it in their profile and they're saying, ah, look at this weak, lib, whatever, blocked me.
Right.
So, I mean, that's already how it kind of works. So I think his plans are, let's remove the current block feature. Users will still be able to block others from sending them direct messages. So that's, I think, what you mean by soft block. So you can't send me a direct message and you can't comment on my things, but you can still see them. And alternatively, we're leaving the mute option, right? So I don't have to hear from you ever again.
Right.
or see you anywhere.
Yeah. Well, and so it got me thinking, and I wanted to know your opinion on this, is how do you think the block feature should work? Because when I heard the changes, I thought, well, that makes sense, because I'm writing, I have a public profile, I make public posts. If you don't have an account at all, or you're in incognito mode, you can see my posts. But if I block you, I definitely don't want you engaging with me.
Yeah.
But why would I stop you from seeing my stuff? Like, why is that a feature that people care
And
about?
I mean, you currently can anyway, right? So you're going to make me steel man Elon's argument. And that really sucks because I think at the end of this, I might agree with him a little bit, and I don't want to do that.
I understand that feeling. That's why I had you take that position.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. So, I mean, I think one of the problems is when you get into, kind of quasi criminal matters. Let's say, you have a stalker, something like that. There are legitimate reasons why you don't want that person seeing your posts. However, if you're making them public, there are so many other ways that they could see that post without you being able to block their IP, for instance. And then, of course, even then, they could go on a VPN and see your post. So I can't really make the case for it being, or well, I guess the question you did ask though was, what should the block feature be? Well, yeah, I mean, ideally the block feature would be you, there is no way in which you could see any of my public posts, but that's an impossible
That's
feature.
the, but that's impossible. We're
Yeah.
both technical people. We know that that can't happen. So I don't, and I think that that's more my thing, is that I think a lot of people, I really do not like Elon Musk's handling or stewardship of the X platform. It's his now, so fine, burn it to the ground if you want to. I don't care. But I just don't see a real problem with this particular feature. And I don't honestly know why it bothered him so much. He's up in arms about, like, this block feature should never have been, and blah, blah. I'm like, the only people who would care about this are the people who are either too lazy or too unintelligent to be able to get into incognito mode and click on somebody's link if they were blocked, right?
Yeah, I mean,
And
I'm.
I will say one more thing about it, because there
Okay.
is a feature that I haven't talked about, which is the inverse of that. So I block you.
Right.
You can't engage with me, but I'm also not going to see your posts full score.
Right.
And I think that's where Elon takes issue, because I think that his change, from what I'm reading is true, is that, say you blocked Elon,
Right.
right? Now, with the change to how the block works, you will still, big air quotes, organically stumble across Elon posts in your timeline.
Correct. And
So I think that's the big cheese there.
that's what people are concerned with around the timing of this. Okay, so first of all, we're so close to the November election, right? And people are already, I mean, I'm so like you said, you're on Blue Sky, I'm on X. I am honestly not sleeping well because of X probably. The last few days on X have just been a nightmare with people. And why do we engage? Well, there's lots of reasons. But anyway, the point being that people are upset that they're going to be seeing all of this Nazi nonsense propaganda in their feed again. And the answer to that is now the feature that I like and I've always used because it's funnier to me than block is to mute someone because that person doesn't know that you've muted them and they are screaming at you. They're like, wait, oh, crickets. Oh, where's your reply, loser?
But you'll never
I'll
know.
never see it and they don't know I did it. And I
Well,
think
and
that's
so,
fantastic.
but now won't the same thing happen with the block system? I guess they'll be prohibited from actually, like, posting in a post that you have made. Like, if you start
Right.
a tweet, they can see it now potentially, but if
Yes.
they try and post to it, they'll be told that they're blocked. But
And
Your methodology is more of, no, I want you to see it.
Yeah.
I want you to see my posts.
Right.
I want you to drive engagement with your crazy, you know, nonsense,
yeah.
But I'm not going to read it and I'm going to sleep better because of it.
And it is funny because when you mute someone, you do get the notifications that people are responding to them. And it's usually in your favor, right? So it's like somebody says some bullshit in my, you know, in my feed.
Yeah.
I don't see it, but I see somebody calling them an absolute moron and countering it. So now all of my notifications are basically supporting my argument. And I don't have to see what this idiot
says. You don't know what anybody said, but you see 30 or 40 replies of like, he didn't say that, you idiot. And you're like, oh, well, I guess they're supporting that.
It's so much healthier. So
that's,
you know, Elon makes a, unfortunately, good argument that he thinks that the mute feature is a stronger form of just blocking people from interacting with you.
I really don't like to do the you have to give it to Elon bit there.
I don't want
to,
but yeah, I know. Maybe just we call him Melon so that it doesn't feel so.
Can we
call him Melon?
I'll call him Melon when he does something particularly boneheaded.
I mean,
But circling back, though, it made me think about this idea of the echo chambers thing. You know, you've got everybody has some form of social media these days. You're either on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok or Blue Sky or Twitter or what have you. Everybody is, whether they like it or not, getting their, you know, explore feeds, whatever that is, the discovery.
The for you
stuff is all being curated by algorithms in ways that you don't think about. You know, we're both in software. We know what's happening behind the scenes, and it's a lot more nefarious than your average user would basically think. But you know, I think that just by the way that engagement works, I don't think that we're getting into echo chambers, particularly on Twitter. I think that the thing about Twitter that Elon did is he wants engagement. He wants people raging at one another because that's just more and more posts. And the more and more posts that you have to do, the more ads you're going to see. And so you get your timeline filled with all sorts of just, you know, rage bait that will just get you to engage with the platform more.
So let me read something for you that that basically goes to your point. You're going to be disappointed in me. And I know a lot of people are, because one of the things I like to say all the time when I'm making fun of people is, look at you blue tick moron paying for this free app.
Right.
Well, I pay for Twitter. And I pay for Twitter you know, specifically for engagement. It's more fun to get that engagement. And unfortunately Elon has stolen that, you know, $11 from me this month. But let me read something for you. If I go into the monetization section, I'm gonna click on monetization. And this is if this doesn't answer it for everyone who's listening, there's no better way to explain it than this. I'm going to go into ad revenue.
Hold on. I'm going to ask you right now. Okay. Everybody listening right now, I want you to think of what the numbers are going to be.
Okay.
And if you're under whatever Nate says, you're fine. If you go over, you have to go to our Twitter, our Blue Sky, or everything. Give us a follow and like our stuff.
Please. Okay, are you ready? Three requirements to turn on monetization for your account on Twitter.
I'm ready.
Okay. The first two are super easy, okay?
Let's do it.
Subscribe to Twitter, okay? Obviously. You're not going to be involved in the ad sharing unless you subscribe to Twitter. Fine, okay? Have a minimum. Can you get a minimum number of followers? Now, I'm saying this is easy. How many followers do you think you need minimum?
I'm going to guess 1,000.
500.
500, okay.
All you need is 500. So right now, I don't have to be Tim Pool. I don't have to be Elon Musk. I don't have to create outrage. Right now, I can just have my nice, social community, whatever it is. Chess, anything I want to talk about. Sounds like I'll be getting ad revenue sharing.
In the paycheck, it sounds like.
Wait a minute. Here's
that third item.
Here it is. have at least this many number of impressions on your posts within the last 3 months.
Now, impressions are, remind me, that's views and comments.
It shows up on somebody's timeline. So that means if it shows up on your timeline, it's probably because somebody that you know liked it.
Okay.
Okay, or you follow me. Okay, and we already know I have to have at least 500 followers. So the best I can do just based on my followers is 500 impressions. Okay? Now, if my followers like it, now it can spiderweb a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
500 impressions is, that seems, well, mountainous.
500 impressions seems like a lot to you? And by the way, I can tell you it is kind of a lot. I can give you some of the impressions on some of our tweets right now on the, guys, follow us on at Blue Sedition on Twitter and yell at me for paying for Twitter. So let's go look at it. Now, my pinned tweet, because it is pinned, and if you are viewing my profile, you're always going to see that, right? 925. It's been pinned for 5 days.
Okay, no, it's been not bad.
925 impressions. Okay. But now this is the aggregate of all impressions for a rolling 3 month period. This is the number that you have to hit in order to be eligible for ad revenue. You have any idea?
I have no idea.
Throw out a wild ass guess.
100,000.
Okay, it's so much higher.
More than 100,000.
More than 100,000.
All right, I gotta go give us a follow on Twitter, I guess.
Yeah, you do. You do. It's 5 million.
Oh my god.
It's so listen, I see everybody sharing their ad revenue numbers. I see Tim Pool showing a receipt and saying, thank you, Elon, for my $14,000 this month. Okay.
Yeah.
What is Tim Pool doing?
Well, I can tell you what Tim Pool's doing.
All right. Let's not talk about Tim Pool specifically. He's cashing checks from Putin as well. But he's
allegedly
posting the most divisive content. Straight
right.
I mean, nothing does better than a straight lie. On Twitter.
Oh, I know. Because you get reactionaries who are like, that's a straight lie and here's why.
And then you get people
and then all of their followers.
So, right. My post where by the way, the Granville County GOP told me that they aren't putting up any Mark Robinson signs because they quote keep running out.
Yeah.
So a literal
very believable.
County GOP office, who, if you've ever driven by one of these, by the way, in LA, we have a lot of them for Dems, and you have them for both sides. Their windows are plastered. Whomever the current candidates are for that election cycle. So you'll have Kamala, you'll have, you know, local people, you'll have everybody in those windows.
Yeah, especially down ballot for local things.
Especially for local things. And the Granville County GOP for the gubernatorial race does not have a Mark Robinson sign in their window.
That's shocking. That's amazing.
Yeah. So anyway, that's how you make money on Twitter. It's exactly like you said. Elon has figured it out. Part of me, and I won't, I'm not going to give him credit for being some kind of mastermind here.
I think he sees the engagement aspect. I think he gets that.
For sure.
I mean, ignoring the fact that he claims to be a free speech abolitionist or whatever, absolutionist, excuse me. You know, he doesn't care about any of that stuff.
No.
He cares. His bottom line is how popular he is on his platform and then dollars at the end of the day.
Right.
In that order.
Right.
Yep. So anything that drives engagement is good for dollars, and anything that drives engagement by him being popular with these people, you know, engagement driving engagement, for lack of a better way of phrasing it, because it'll be about Papa Elon, that's just good for him too.
Yeah.
Now, you know, getting back to the idea of the echo chamber, though, I'm sort of convinced that it's like an echo chamber, except everybody's got a bullhorn. You know what I mean? Like they're trying to make as much noise as possible. They're financially incentivized in many cases to do so. And so on, I'll just, because this was a Blue Sky specific article originally, was them saying it's an echo chamber. No, you'll never get into a conversation with somebody of an opposing viewpoint on Blue Sky, was their sort of thesis. And man, I've been using Blue Sky for a couple months now, and I got to tell you that there's just nothing farther from the truth. I find people who will come out of the woodwork to argue with me on any point that I make. I wrote something about my son's baseball team, and somebody, some other dad came out and he's like, "You're completely wrong, and here's why." And I'm like, "Wow, I got one engagement, and it's this guy who does not agree with me, and he's very vocal about it." But you know, I don't think your average user is going to end up muting or blocking people in these cases, because I think that there's, for one, it's a fledgling, you know, social space at the moment. So
yeah,
nobody has gotten to the point where they're so fed up that they're just going to start blocking on the fly. Now, I will say, more and more people have been fleeing from Twitter to come to Blue Sky, and we've seen some of the Nazi folk come across, and they get instantly blocked by everybody. There's even like I forget the dang word. It's like a list, basically. Yeah, and you can subscribe to them, and it'll just keep adding people that you're blocking to, based on, you know, somebody that you trust curating this list. And so it's I find it very interesting. I think I don't need to dive into it, but yeah. I don't think that even on other social sites that I experience the echo chamber effect that everybody keeps talking about. I mainly, whenever I engage in social media, regardless of what platform I use, it's always people arguing with me.
Oh, for sure. I mean, what else? I'm not there. It's just like the Yelp effect. Okay.
Yes.
It's very, very.
That's a really
rare,
good point.
Right, to go on to Yelp to say, "Oh, I had a really good experience at this restaurant." You're going to go on to Yelp to say, "This place was trash. Oh my God, there was a rat eating it in the corner." You know, that's what you kind of want to do. I even want to do, I'm not going to social media because I want to be like high-fiving bros, you know?
Yeah.
I want to go fucking get mad. I want to yell at someone. I want to punch a Nazi on social media, you know?
I do know. Yeah. Well, I find that interesting. I think that it's something that we're going to, you know, we'll obviously keep watching Elon and his Twitter over the coming months, especially as the election draws near. It'll be interesting to see how that, you know, plays out. You even mentioned the other day that you'd seen actual election stuff pinned to the top of your timeline on Twitter.
I'll tell you,
where they were trying to register users and it was real.
I'll tell you what I'm really shocked at. There's two things that I'm really shocked at that if you know, the MAGA cultists were paying attention, they would be very upset by this too. But of course, there was the one registration link. I think it was a day after the debate that was pinned to the top. Now, I can't verify whether Republicans were seeing the same thing or, you know, I'm sure it was not that nefarious. But, and then when you go on Grok, and Grok,
their AI,
for people that don't know, it's their AI that for a while was just a very thin wrapper over OpenAI. I don't know how much of it now is their own, you know, their own model. But if you go on Grok and you ask it something related to Donald Trump, Kamala Harris, or, you know, anything related to the 2024 election, it says, in fact, let me do it right now. Draw me an image of Donald Trump crying, and it'll make me it, and by the way, it's one of the only really impressive image generators that will actually use the likeness of the people without like pretending it. So here it is, it just did it for me here too. The first thing that pops up before the image is, "For accurate and up-to-date information about the 2024 US elections, please visit vote.gov."
And
it takes you right to the official website of the United States government, vote.gov.
Right.
And from there, there's also the first thing, their hero card on there is register to vote or update your registration for the upcoming election.
Color me surprised.
Yeah. And I don't think a lot of people on the right are talking about this, because generally when people on the right think about letting people vote, they're generally worried that hurts their chances.
Getting people out to vote has historically not gone well for them. That's true.
Yeah. So, anyway,
it is interesting though that you know, neither of us are hearing anything about that specifically, given how we are tied to our social networks and yelling at people online, especially since we see those. I'm going to start making some noise. I think I'm going to just get on there and be like, has anybody seen this? Can you believe this? And just start a little discourse to see if I can rile up the right people.
Yeah, that's not bad. I think I'm going to try that too on Twitter. I think going back to the beginning of the conversation, which is it an echo chamber? I mean, I think it's human nature to seek validation from the people that
agree you care
with
about.
You
yeah, sure.
and you agree with, but
you look up to or right. whatever. Yeah.
But my For You feed on Twitter, and I just clicked on it. Okay. Is I see a Tim Walz post. Great.
That's fine. Pretty good.
And then I swear to you, right underneath that, Laura Loomer. Okay.
Oof.
I don't
follow, you follow her, right?
I don't follow Laura Loomer. I don't.
That's weird.
But, you know, I certainly interact with people in her comments that say ridiculous things. So everybody's For You feed is like this. It's, you know, it's tons of people that you're arguing with and, you know, people that you agree with as well. Now,
and so I guess Elon's suggesting that that's appropriate, though. Like, if you had Laura Loomer blocked and you saw her on your For You page, this is his ideal situation, because he wants you to see the opposing viewpoints, even though you don't want engagement from them.
However, how I understand it is, if I mute her, I won't see her posts, right?
Yeah, so I guess not. That's a good point.
Like, from now on, if I really want to block somebody, I mute them and I block them.
Yeah, you do both now.
You know, all right. Don't know. But that's if the reports, because, you know, when Elon first took over this app, he was like, let's implement this feature. And then the feature absolutely sucked and it broke and it whatever. Who knows what he wants this feature to do behind the scenes? I think he's saying one thing to not get banned from the App Store. And then, you know, what he's actually going to do is might be another thing.
That's a really good point. He does have a tendency to speak out the side of his mouth while promising out the other.
Right. Right.
I find it very fascinating. I like, you know, looking at social media through this sort of pseudo-political lens and try and get an idea of how things are going there.
Yeah.
I want to transition here. Okay. That was fun. I want to transition to something else. Okay.
All right.
So yesterday, disgraced Senator, actually, I don't know, Joe Manchin. It was Joe Manchin.
Yeah, we know about Joe Manchin.
I say disgraced because he's basically called himself a Democrat for the longest time. He's never really been a Democrat, and he's retiring because he can't stand the Democrats.
Right.
You know what? Actually, maybe he's a perfect Democrat. Nobody hates the Democrats more than Democrats. So
there you go.
Anyway, so he comes up and this is in response to a statement that Vice President Kamala Harris made about gutting the Senate's filibuster rule to pass codifying abortion rights. And he says that he said, shame on her. I mean, hilarious. It's terrible. But his gist of it was that the filibuster is an important piece of legislative practice in the Senate. He claims, and I'm looking for the quote now, that it's what separates the Senate and the House in terms of their ridiculousness. Let me find the exact.
He sees it as transforming the Senate into the House on steroids.
Yeah, the House on steroids is pretty much giving away the game there, where he's like, the House is a clown show where these people, you know, get up and they parade whatever ideas and nonsense they want to. They pass a law. It goes to the Senate where the real adults are, and we need the filibuster to be able to discuss these important topics, you know, ad nauseum, and either send them back, talk about them forever and ensure they never pass, or eventually come to an understanding and pass them through. Okay. What do you think about that?
Okay, so I'm ready for this. I am ready to abolish the filibuster, and here's why. So there is some truth to what Manchin said. It does seem sometimes like the House is a clown show. However, the House, more than the Senate, feels like it represents the majority of Americans, though the whole idea of representative democracy in current times literally makes no sense to me. And anyway, the whole point of the filibuster, in my mind, is to block legislation that the majority of Americans want, such that 1, 2, 3 senators can take the blame for blocking that piece of legislation using the filibuster because they are in the pocket of the lobby. So
okay.
I want gun control. I want to codify Roe v. Wade. I want, you know, whatever it is.
Healthcare reform
that the majority of the Americans want. We can say, as the majority, as the Democratic majority, and I'm saying the Democrats are complicit in this as well, which is why it is, I would bet any money that Kamala Harris will not abolish the filibuster, okay? That her administration will not abolish the filibuster. The whole point of it is so that the majority party can say, oh man, we tried, they promised to filibuster, they did filibuster, nothing we can do.
Well, I will say that the skeptics view, has definitely seen that in recent years. Well, we've held the White House and the Senate. We have, you know, the tie-breaking vote in Kamala Harris today, and for the last 3.5 years, we haven't held the House at the moment, but when we held all three, it was seemingly very, it was good for the Democrats to be able to campaign on issues that are big about people. People care about codifying Roe v. Wade. They care about healthcare reform. They care about school reform. All these things that there were proposed solutions for. It would make it to the Senate, and usually the Republicans, but not always, would stand up and issue the, not even the filibuster, but actually just the threat of a filibuster. And then it would be, you know, shrug emoji. Well, we tried. Right. Let's keep campaigning on these issues for the next 30 years and see what we can do.
Listen, before an election, I don't want to... This is the problem with the elections and having to choose the quote unquote lesser of two evils, is that I have to sit here and choose my words carefully because I don't want to demonize the Democrats right before a very, very important national election. But
and to be clear, both Nate and I are registered Democrats. We're not independents. We are very political minded. We both vote in primaries. We vote up and down ballots. We try and stay as informed and educated on issues as we can be to make the best possible decisions as we can see for everyone. And so when he says we're trying not to get down on Democrats right before a literally pivotal election, maybe the last one, he means it. We really think that everybody should vote Democrat if they can. But that said, I mean, Democrats, they're playing the game too, is what you're getting at.
I'm going to say, I think you say this a lot, and maybe you got it from somewhere, but I'm going to quote you on saying, Democrats are the absolute worst except for Republicans.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think if I look at my, I won't say Twitter, because Twitter I'm a little bit more punching Nazis because they're everywhere, but maybe my Facebook is more friends, people that I'm close with.
Yeah, sure.
You know, a lot of Dems, and I think I am the most vocal among them of, man, I am more critical of the Dems than most people I know.
Yeah.
So anyway, all that I wanted to get to the.
I got a post that I made just yesterday. No, 2 days ago, excuse me. That's just right up this alley. I said it was in response to somebody who were claiming again that we're in this echo chamber, and I said, the only people who hate Democrats more than the right are Democrats. And I said, simple example. I can't stand me.
There you go. We're awful.
So
We're terrible.
yeah,
No,
and we're terrible.
I mean, man, I wish there were someone better. I wish there were someone better for the country than what we're dealing with right now. And I think everybody does. I think even as a Democrat, you have to. But then you see the absolute goblin of a man that's trying to win this
Yeah.
election, and you have no choice.
The
But
abject terror that I'm filled
yeah.
with at the notion of those people gaining the reins of power is too much.
But you brought up fighting on like Roe v. Wade, for instance.
Yeah.
For God's sakes, okay? We were told in 2020 that we have to vote for Joe Biden to save Roe v. Wade. We were told, we were told, they would do everything in their power, quote unquote, to codify Roe v. Wade into law. Now we're getting the same thing again. Kamala is running on, I'm gonna codify Roe v.
Yeah.
Wade, okay? I'm gonna abolish
Well,
the
and she's,
filibuster.
and that's the thing is that the rhetoric has now become, more heated. There's a new angle. It's not, I'm going to codify Roe. It's that there were impediments to codifying Roe that I will remove.
Right.
And so the whole reason I wanted to bring this up, and I want to get to the other side of it because I think that there's a really good exploration or exercise to do about what's the bad side of doing away with the filibuster. But I mean, if it was as simple as the president can wave a magic wand to do away with the filibuster to codify Roe v. Wade, well, we have a Democratic president
We
now.
literally have that.
So
I mean, are
why
you,
can't
is Kamala saying you need to vote for me and we need to win the House and we need to win the Senate? Is that what, because I'm not hearing that.
I'm not hearing that either. I think that it's just her rhetoric, like you said. I think that all things being equal, I think that if she had the magic wand to do away with the filibuster, given her presidency win in November, I don't think she would waive it. I don't feel that it's in the best interests of the Democrats. Particularly at the top or the higher echelons of the political landscape, to actually go through with these changes because it's part of their campaigning strategy. And
Right.
so, Manchin getting upset about it is funny to me, but again, I don't see much more of this than a carrot to keep us moving.
I would say that I would shave my head if day one Kamala is elected and abolishes the filibuster, but I already have a shaved head. So,
Man, I'll go you one better. If she abolishes the filibuster to codify Roe, even if she's unsuccessful in doing it, but she actually goes through with abolishing the filibuster, I'll shave my head. I'll put that on all our social media. We'll have a good time with it.
oh my God. Well, you know what?
I'll get your son, I'll get my son, they can all help. Everybody will have a great time.
This is amazing. And you can't filibuster it.
And you can't filibuster it, nothing. I
Okay.
will go through with it. It'll be
Okay.
great.
All right. I'm excited for that.
So, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, the whole thing to me, it's so sketchy. It's almost like we've talked about this before offline. Where it feels like they're running on these things that they know drive the most donations and fill the coffers. And it's like, is anything ever going to get done? Because both sides, well, I don't want to say both sides. One side is always, I feel like the Democrats is always running on the thing that the majority of Americans want. The majority of Americans want gun control.
Well, yeah, I agree. I want to just also call out the two of the topics we've discussed today. Again, it's all about driving engagement. It's the same game in a different, venue. Instead of driving engagement on my social media platform, it's the the elected officials driving engagement in their campaign speeches and getting the right, you know, what did you call them? Not metrics, but impressions from their from the electorate and getting the right sets of eyes on everybody, making sure that you're getting the right people onto your CNN interviews and all this other stuff. And it has no substance outside of driving engagement is what it feels like as a cynical midlife male.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. I don't have anything else to add on this. I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't either. If it did happen, though, let's talk about that.
Okay, so you wanted to talk about the other side, the bad side.
I think it's an interesting thought experiment because, you know, growing up, and my wife and I talk about this a lot, you always assumed that there were adults in the room somewhere. You know what I mean? You were like, well, whatever that was, you're like, I can't jaywalk here. I'm going to be in trouble with some adults somewhere. And as you go through life, you come across these various things. And I got to say, in the last, probably since Reagan, but in my lifetime, with my memory, since at the very least, Bush 2, politics has become more and more of a clown show every day. And every day I'm going, God, I hope my kid doesn't grow up to be a politician. As opposed to when I was a kid, my mom was, you know, my parents would be like, wow, he could be a congressman, or oh, he could be a senator, or he could be, you know, and like now you're like, God, I hope he doesn't become one of those. They're just the worst.
Yeah. I mean,
and I saw it first. I think we can agree on this, that the House, I called it a clown show for a reason. I think the House, especially since 2014, we'll say the midterms in 2014, just the tail end of Obama's years when all of the Marjorie Taylor Greene crazy folk.
The Boberts and yeah.
The Bobert, but yeah, they're getting into the House and they've realized that probably before most, that the engagement thing is what matters, not so much what you say or what you stand for, just being loud and obnoxious and getting as much airtime as possible. And so I worry that because the House is the way that it is, if we do away with the filibuster, maybe Manchin has a slight nugget of truth in his statement of that, then there's no incentive for anyone in the Senate to listen to anybody else. It becomes that same tribalism. Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to tell me, well, the Senate's already in this tribalist nonsense.
It really is, right? I mean, look at some of the things that we're voting on that go down two party decades lines. And you're like, what the hell? What? It's,
yeah.
You know, it's some of the craziest. And it's the, okay, here's where I think Manchin, God, why are you doing this to me today? I have to say, here's where I think I agree with Manchin.
I wanted to bring some harder questions today. They're fun, but I like going through these thought experiments.
Okay, so without the filibuster, okay, yeah. We just have to, and this is why I'm saying it, has Kamala ever even said, I need you to vote down ballot, we need to take the Senate, we need to take the House. Without the filibuster, the minority party loses that key tool, to stop the majority from, you know, ham jamming there.
So hold on.
Okay.
I want to provide a counterpoint to that.
Okay.
Okay. The year is 20. I want to say 18.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to go to the future. I thought, okay. All right. 2018.
Maybe it was 17. Trump has been trying to repeal and replace, quote unquote, Obamacare.
Right.
And makes it to a Senate vote.
Mm-hmm.
The minority party was the Democrats,
right?
And there was no filibuster. There was no threat of a filibuster. So when I hear, quote, the minority party losing this, you know, imperative tool, I think to myself, I can't remember the last time the Democrats used this extraordinary tool to their advantage as the minority. Now, I might be misremembering exactly how that vote may have been like a procedural vote that couldn't have been filibustered because it wasn't actually an enaction of law. It was an edit to a law that exists or something like that. There's probably some bureaucratic minutiae about the Senate I don't know.
I mean, as the minority party, the Dems would use the filibuster more and did than the Republicans. But here's the number for you.
Okay,
In
let's go.
the 2019 to 2020 congressional term, there was a
Okay.
record number of filibusters by the Democrats in the minority.
Was there
Three
really?
328 times
Oh
they
my
used
gosh.
the filibuster. And I can't say, it might have been the same motion coming up over and over again. It might have been,
Right.
who knows? But since, and the numbers are fairly even, by the way, if going back to 2009, according to this looks very legitimate source, the Dems have used it 657 times since 2009, which, by the way, makes 2020 so crazy that
Yeah.
half of it came in that one time frame. And Republicans used it 609 times. So it certainly is a tool that both sides seem to use
So it's been
often.
utilized by both. I'm just maybe I'm unaware because I don't see any news outlets running with these Democrat filibuster stories. I definitely see it when the Republicans are trying to filibuster. I mean, they filibustered the replacements to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, obviously, during the tail end of Obama's second term. And I mean, I only heard about Republicans filibustering, but I mean, that's fair. It makes sense that we would use it as well. Now, if we did, oh, so go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, I mean, I think it's being used more now as just a it's a tool of inaction that,
Yeah.
it kind of shows the people, I'm on your side. I'll do everything to stop the Republican agenda. I'll do everything to stop the Democratic agenda, despite it potentially being things that the majority of people want. So isn't it scary, though? Isn't it scary to steel man Manchin's argument here? And maybe I feel this way a little bit too. Isn't it scary? What were those 328 times the
Yeah.
Democrats had to filibuster? And if they didn't filibuster,
What would have gone
what would have
through?
gotten through?
Or at the very least landed on the president's desk,
Which
which Trump at the
at the
time.
time,
Sure.
right.
It is an interesting question. It makes me wonder if, I mean, imagine that you've done away with the filibuster and you do get the clown show. I think that at the very least, when you do something that is an action rather than an inaction, by way of the filibuster as an example, actionable events are much more newsworthy, and I think that they reach the general populace more directly. You can be an offline person or, you know, an independent or a non-voter and have no idea about any of these things that are going on because they don't cause any change at all. But when you cause change, if there was no procedure like the filibuster to ensure that some law didn't get passed because it was insane, well, that would at the very least, I would hope, move the needle from the independent or undecided or,
You
you
would
know,
hope.
not listening voters to the point of, well, hold on. Why did they pass that crazy law? I'm going to vote for somebody who's going to get it overturned.
And then, does it give more power to the executive branch? Where,
The pen, yeah.
I guess it doesn't. It's the same, right?
The same
If
power.
it, but it's likely that if there is a full majority, and the House, the Senate, and the White
Yeah.
House is all the same party, that could get scary. So I just. To give some context to everybody about some of the things that the Democrats filibustered in 2020, you can see it was kind of used as a negotiation tactic. So
Okay.
they used the filibuster to block the CARES Act, the coronavirus relief package, twice so that they could get in that additional $600 weekly federal unemployment supplement,
Okay.
which obviously helped a lot of people.
Sure.
They blocked a the they blocked border wall funding,
Okay.
which
I guess I did hear about that
yeah,
one.
I think that one was it. You know, it's fine. The news cycle right now is just so ridiculous that I forget things that happened 3 days ago. So, I truly don't know. I am sick and tired of the inaction. I think I'm really sick and tired of us not getting things done that the majority of Americans want. But the problem with that is the majority of Americans are not being represented in Congress right now. So
certainly not by way of the Senate.
Right.
You know, the House, of course, is broken up more by the populace in the states that you live in. Of course, those are obviously also gerrymandered to heck and back. But, you know, I think back to the most recent midterm in 22, and I remember the promises of the red wave when they had taken a ton of seats in the House as it was. And they were thinking that there was going to be this absolute tsunami of red takeover in the House, and they were going to become this coalition that was unstoppable. And it basically petered out. They didn't get anywhere. I mean, they lost some key seats, and they didn't take over in the way that was expected. And I think, at least I hope, that a lot of that had to do with their policy positions. I think that they got loud and obnoxious about policies that the vast majority of Americans, even the offline ones, were like, no, that's no. And then they voted for somebody else. Or if they were, you know, this mystical moderate Republican, they might have just stayed home because they were like, wow, I don't think this person represents me at all. I can't vote for the blue guy, but I'm not voting for that. And just didn't show up down ballot.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if we do away with the filibuster, or we iterate it in some way where it becomes less of a pervasive tool that can just shut everything down. If you make it so that the people have to stand behind their positions on things, these elected officials need to be able to say, we're going to vote on this. And now we vote. And then you see these votes as opposed to I threaten a filibuster and then everybody goes on vacation. If that doesn't enact some kind of change, either people like the way that their senators are voting or they don't. And then maybe you would see that sort of same as the House in 22. Maybe you'd see that the moderate Republican maybe not vote for that guy and he doesn't win his seat again or what have you in more closely contested states.
I think that's about as optimistic as somebody can be about something like this happening. I don't see it that way right now. I see it right now as, first of all, we need the Democratic president. I'm fine with getting rid of the filibuster. I want things to get through to her. I want her to decide, make the final call. I trust the president to do that. Right now, I'm looking at the party breakdown in the House. You know, it's 220 Republicans, 212 Democrats. Even if it were even, even if it were 220, you know, or whatever the number has to be for them to be even, or close to even, right?
Sure.
Americans aren't going to get what the majority wants. The majority wants gun control. The majority wants healthcare reform. The majority, you know, what we can't even get abolishing daylight savings time, which everybody wants. Why can't we get that done?
Yeah.
So
no, you're right. And again, it comes back to that idea of tribalism of there are a lot of voters who are single issue voters and that issue is red or blue. And they're on both sides. I mean, I'm not saying Democrats are any better. But yeah.
So I'm not sure yet why I'm for abolishing the filibuster. I'm not sure yet why Kamala is saying abolishing the filibuster will get Roe codified. Just at least as things are currently constituted, there's got to be something I'm missing in that plan. I just don't see it. So I think we've filibustered the end of this podcast. We went longer than our first two. I've got my mic working correctly again. I think the setup sounds better. I think we're both enjoying doing these, especially on current events. We had 400 topics we could have chosen today. So, you know, we went with these two. These were things that we wanted to talk about. I think we have a lot more we can talk about, but we should probably wrap here. Do you have any any last
words? No, just tune in for more. And as always, thanks for listening to Blue Sedition.
Yeah, don't forget to follow us on Blue Sedition on Twitter, also on YouTube. We post links to these episodes on YouTube as well, even though we don't have any video, but also on Apple and Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you next time.